TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope you're hungry. I made us some jambalaya for tonight.
Oh, Chris, I'm so excited. I love some great jambalaya. I hope it has that special Delton spice in it, though. Because just primo when you put that in the jambalaya. Not too much. Just the right exactly. amount, though.
Exactly. You know, I was thinking there that Delton parsley is like the blowfish of herbs.
Well, you know, I was thinking to myself, too, you know, wow. I mean, any Delton spice or herb, my goodness. I would definitely wonder as to what that might do to you.
Since it definitely heightens the sensations,
exactly.
I think, anyway.
Very much so. So it's very popular for lovers as well, I believe. So,
all right, everyone. Yeah, we're going to continue our look today at the second season of Strange New Worlds with Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War. And here's a quick rundown of the episode. For Dr. M. Benga and Nurse Christine Chapel, the horrors of war come rushing back when Doc Ra, a former Klingon general who defected to the Federation, comes aboard the Enterprise. Now an ambassador for the Federation, trying to bridge the two sides in the aftermath of the 2256-57 war, Doc Ra came to be known as the Butcher of Jagal for his brutal tactics. But for M. Benga, the actions that earned Ra that moniker hit closer to home than anyone knew, and the end game plays out in the Enterprise's sick bay. So, Matthew, we come off of last week's fun, silly episode, the crossover with Lower Decks, those old scientists, and we dive deep into conflict and very serious matter here, which I know for both of us brought back echoes of Deep Space Nine.
I mean, I don't know if there's any stretch of episodes where, especially from the previous episode to this one, where I felt such emotional whiplash, like thematic whiplash. Mm-hmm. Like it just, you know, we are 180 degrees from where we were in the last episode, which is so strange to me. Yeah. And I will say, I'll just put this right up front, you know, to come off of this episode and then know we're going to the musical episode next week, I actually don't understand what in the heck they're doing this season like this, because I don't know. It seems completely inappropriate to have this episode sandwiched mm-hmm. by those two episodes.
Yeah, it almost feels like, do you remember years ago when we used cassette tapes and you would make a mixtape and you would try to arrange the songs
exactly.
in order to kind of give you some variety? Mm-hmm. It almost feels like that, because also if you pay attention, the star dates are jumping around, which I don't know if that's an homage to the original series and how the star dates were often out of order. I pointed this out in season one as well. Or if it's that they wrote these stories in a different order, and they've just kind of decided, because it's not, I don't think this is the case, because there is some loose continuity going on, for example, with Spock and Chapel's relationship, but because they're mostly episodic, they could be moving them around a little bit, but it is a weird feeling for sure.
I mean, and if that's the case, this feels almost like an episode that should take place after the musical episode then.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
exactly.
that
yeah.
you are, you know, so that the season kind of ends on maybe a more serious note in much the same way yeah. that the last season did. You know, we had some more serious episodes, I think, mm-hmm. to wrap up season one as well. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, I just feel like this season, this feels like an inappropriately spaced mixtape. Like, you know, like yeah. that the it's just we needed to kind of rethink the structure of this season
right.
in the same way you would structure a like a mixtape, because in many ways, too, I mean, that's what they're going for. They mm-hmm. want to kind of be, you know, have different genres and, yeah. and allow the season. But you want there to be progressive ups and downs to the season,
yeah.
and not in quality, but in just the highs and lows of the season in the sense of where you're going kind yeah. of emotionally.
Right. Well, if they had done the musical before this one, if you look at the stretch that you would have had, though, you would have had Charades, Those Old Scientists, and then Subspace Rhapsody as 3 out of 4 with only Lost in Translation in there. So you would have had this stretch of very light, humorous stories that probably wouldn't have flowed as well either. So I don't know. I don't know what the best mix would be. I do know in this one, because what's going on here calls back to The Broken Circle, the first episode. I was feeling like when I watched it that I wish that this had been closer, like earlier in the season, so there wasn't as much space between The Broken Circle and this one for the Mbenga Chapel story. But I also think that aspects of this story, psychologically anyway, may very well lead into the finale. And
sure,
so flipping, like you said, flipping this one and the musical around could make sense there as well to mm-hmm. drive us into the finale.
No, I mean, I 100% agree with you on that. And I think, you know, like you said, too, I think this episode really does kind of put you in a DS9 state of mind mm-hmm. because this feels like, you know, Seejit, AR-558, or In the Pale Moonlight.
Yeah.
Those really intense episodes of Deep Space Nine, where we were diving deep into some of the most poignant and difficult questions mm-hmm. that come along with war and, you know, what happens during war. And then, of course, here playing with that aftermath. And so, you know, it's one of those things to which I think, you know, this episode is, and we were talking about this on the other side of the saddle, which was how this episode, I think, really shows that the writing on this show can be the best you've ever seen
mm-hmm.
when it comes to Star Trek. And it was, again, it was just one of those things where coming into this episode, you know, I knew they were going to have the Klingon on there from the promo pictures. I never watched the like promotional video of what's coming.
Yeah, neither do I.
But I see the promo pictures. And yeah. so it felt like this one might be a more serious episode, but I had no idea coming in there that we were going to basically be DS9 series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, which I, you know, yeah. I'll give it away in the sense that I absolutely love, because like you said, we're taking some of those things that we saw in The Broken Circle and some other pieces of information we had from the first season, and we're really building in to these characters in this way, because we know that Chapel and Mbenga and some others were a part of the Klingon War, mm-hmm. whereas the rest of the Enterprise, which we know from John Jackson Miller's book, The Enterprise War, weren't. And so this really builds into that in a way that's, I think, very, very cool mm-hmm. and just wonderfully done in that sense.
Yeah. And the other DS9 episode that it has hints of is Duet, going all the way back to season one.
Yes.
In
yes,
the sense
absolutely.
Of what's happening between Mbenga and Ra, it's not exactly the same scenario. In fact, it has a very interesting twist to it, because in Duet, you're dealing with Kira's animosity because of what was done to her people. But here you're dealing with the fact that Mbenga is actually the person who killed the Klingons, and Ra's taking credit for it. And it's super interesting when they're doing the Klingon judo. And we don't know yet as the viewer that Mbenga is the butcher of J'Gal, as the person who killed the Klingons came to be known. But Mbenga's listening to Ra take credit for everything and give this explanation, knowing very well that that's all a lie. And I thought that was really interesting. But mm-hmm. it does have the same feel as Duet in terms of,
yes,
you know, the one-on-one. I want to mention
yeah.
also, you mentioned the writing and how the writing on this show can be great. This was written by Davey Perez. He wrote Memento Mori in season one. All those who wander, where we lose Hemmer, among the Lotus Eaters, which he wrote with Kirsten Beyer, and then this one. So I feel like the tone of his writing, he would have fit in well, I think, with the DS9 writing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we've kind of mentioned many times in the season so far about when you have a 10 episode season, I think it becomes even more important that as you do the 10 episode mixtape, that you really do make that perfect. It really, the season needs to have your highs and lows. Mm-hmm. Emotionally for the characters, for the story arcs, for everything like that. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, with this, we're also trying to give a sense of loose continuity, but having each episode be able to stand alone a little bit more than some of the other shows we've done. And that takes, I think, a lot more planning. And I would say the first season was very successful in that. I think they found the right mixture. I think, in all honesty, we're going to finish this season out, and they have not gotten that mixture right this season.
Mm. Of us who grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s with magnetic tape know that your relationship may depend on getting that mixtape right.
Exactly. 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 And so, you know, I think this is just one of those places where I think they tried to swing for the fences humor-wise a little bit too much mm-hmm. in the season, and that's kind of where I believe they kind of missed the mark on some of those episodes mm-hmm. instead of creating a little bit more serious take, especially I think of like Charades is a great example of where that could have been the case. Mm-hmm. But again, this episode I think completely nails that, and especially because this really is about digging into the post-traumatic stress of two mm-hmm. of our characters mm-hmm. in Nbenga and Chapel. And
Ortegas as well, but not to such exactly. an extent in the story.
To a lesser extent, there, because right. we don't really get a yeah. chance to spend as much time with her. But
we do get to see how she reacts yes. to what happened to her, contrasting how Nbenga and Chapel mm-hmm. react, which was great.
Yes. No, I 100% agree. I mean, it's great that you kind of have that trinity of in the story of being able to see how they react. And, you know, the questions just become, you know, can you put these broken pieces back together? Can you ever fully be healed? Especially when, you know, war is a thing and you hear this from veterans. That it's impossible to explain to people who weren't there mm-hmm. what things were like, what it was right. like emotionally and mm-hmm. mentally, physically and spiritually to be involved in these things. Mm-hmm. And each of these characters has a different way of dealing with it. And I think, you know, specifically then with Nbenga, we knew coming into the season because they mentioned it, we were going to learn more about his dark side. The fact that, of course, he had created Protocol 12. Apparently, he was basically a secret agent. They called him the Ghost mm-hmm. before he became a doctor. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's this rich history of this character that we have a lot to dig into.
Yeah, which I kind of got the feeling of leading up to this. They've kind of hinted that he had this other past. One thing right. I loved about this episode is that we did get to delve into the experiences of Nbenga and Chapel in the war, instead of them just always alluding to the fact that they fought in the war.
Right.
Because it's easy right. to do that in writing. But to actually take us there.
Yes.
I think was something they needed to do. And I like that they took us so deeply into the trenches here.
Man, so glad you said that, because it's one of those things, you know, I've said many times on the 602 Club. I think we've said it on many times talking throughout the years that we have. It's like show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. And so to actually show us the experience mm-hmm. makes so much more sense, especially here, because what they went through is ineffable. You mm-hmm. can't describe it. You just need to see it. Mm-hmm. The choices that they were forced to make, the situation that they're in where they don't have what they need really to be doing the job as effectively as possible. I mean, all of that. And then, of course, you know, especially for Nvenga, the pressure then that he feels here, will he become a person that he doesn't recognize by the end of this mm-hmm. because of what he feels he needs to do? And that's an incredible question we ask. And it's not really something that we honestly get a complete answer to, because war doesn't leave you, as Chapel says, and wars change people. And this war completely left a mark on Mbenga, which I don't know will ever be erased, especially with where we leave the episode. And so, you know, being able to really dig into that with him, I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then on the same side, doing that with Chapel as well, and seeing how she's trying to deal with this, you know, especially in light of her relationship with Spock. Mm-hmm. Can he help her, or is this something she needs to go through alone, especially since Spock can't really understand this? And so that creating that strain on their relationship, but mm-hmm. also just the strain on her personally to find a way forward when this has been her experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Mbenga and Chapel are both trying to find their way in the years following the Klingon War, which we saw in Discovery. And it was interesting to see why the two of them have this bond that they have, which I think has never really been explained to any extent, really, on the show up until this point. But now it's crystal clear why they're together as doctor and nurse and have this shared experience. There's a lot of talk in here about the Federation and the Klingons. There's the line, Federation or not, everyone is on their own journey. And there's also, Ra explains that now I am simply hoping to make up for my past and connect with others who need healing like you. So I think the idea of healing in the aftermath of a conflict or anything traumatic that happens to you in your life as an individual, because fortunately most of us don't have the experience of having fought in a conflict like that, is an interesting one to explore here. And it reminded me of Gorkon's line from The Undiscovered Country, which is another Star Trek film that this episode really reminds me of. You know, guess who's coming to dinner? When Ra, they actually have the dinner scene here. But Gorkon says, if there is to be a brave new world, our generation is going to have the hardest time living in it. And then Ra had a variation on that in this episode where he says, peace is not a destination. It's a journey. It's a state of mind. And that it took me back to the idea of, in our own world, how we try to come together as a global community, or within a country, first of all, which seems very difficult these days, but as a global community as well, and try to find common ground and try to get over our differences. And ultimately, I think it is a state of mind. It's difficult to forgive someone who's truly wronged you, but I think so much of what drives the wedge between people, and in this case, the Federation and the Klingon Empire, what drives that wedge between them is just how they, in isolation, view one another. And how do you overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you can see why there's such animosity between the Klingon Empire and the Federation in TOS. Mm-hmm. Because of things like this war, the atrocities that the Klingons did commit right. In that war. I think this is nice in that sense. I think, you know, gosh, this is actually one of the best examples, I think, of Strange New Worlds actually adding something really legitimate to canon. Mm-hmm. So, like, if this is in the prime timeline, this is the type of story that actually makes this show worth it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the type of show that helps instead of hurts. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this is a perfect example of that, specifically for exactly what you're speaking about. Because of the way that we then view the Klingons and humans moving into that. And it fits perfectly then as well, even with the way in which, you know, Klingons and humans had such a rough beginning in Enterprise, too. Mm-hmm. And so the ups and downs there. And so I think all of that is, you know, this is exactly what Strange New Worlds should be every single week, in the sense of the way in which it connects with everything. It doesn't have to be this serious every week. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, but this is the perfect example of how Strange New Worlds could be melding itself with everything that came before and completely adding to it without creating any kind of like, well, but I, that you, right, you know, having to do mental gymnastics.
Yeah.
This is the way to you know, keep that from happening, which is so, I think, what made the episode such a joy to be able to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this one, if Ra had survived, then you could imagine that his efforts to bring the two sides together fail. And so once you get to the undiscovered country, you have Gorkhan extending an olive branch again. Of course, doing so because they need help, but still, you can need help and absolutely refuse to reach out to an enemy for that assistance. And Gorkhan chooses to reach out. Now, the fact that Ra is killed at the end of this episode just puts a hard stop to his efforts, which show, like you're saying, why the animosity continues on into the original series. And we see the conflict between Kirk and the various captains, Klingon captains. And then we ultimately get to the point in the undiscovered country of an effort to have peace talks comes to the table again, trying to bring people together. So,
yeah,
I wanted to ask you, because the other episode that this one reminds me of, there are a lot of, it's sort of a greatest hits of stories and elements that tie into this theme, but they're put together in a really nice way. But it reminds me of The Conscience of the King from the original series. And here, I really do feel, and I don't know if you feel the same way, I feel that Ra is sincere in his desire to make up for his past sins and try to do something, even though he got himself in the position to do it on false pretenses. I felt like all the way to the end in his conversation with M'Benga that he truly does want to make up for the past. He is trying to do good, even though he did terrible things in the past. And that also brings up a very important topic in our culture today, which is the idea of second chances and whether someone should be allowed to atone for the past or whether they should just be shut out forever because of something that they did, no matter how long ago.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that's the crux of the question. It's the crux of the entire episode. Mm-hmm. Because there's this whole idea in the episode of playing pretend, where, you know, M'Benga talks specifically to Ortegas about the idea if you pretend long enough, it can become the truth.
Right.
And which, gosh, don't get me started on that thematic element for our world today. But it ties directly into the lies that Ra has been telling himself.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I think the way you can read the episode can also be that Ra has been telling himself these lies so long that he actually believes them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And he's doing it for purposes to which are ones that make him feel better about himself and therefore aren't really about the altruism of the matter.
But
they're more about
Yeah.
You know, so what you're saying, I think, is absolutely a read mm-hmm. you can have in the episode. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also the other side of the episode, which is where Mbenga basically, I think, lands of reading Ra, right, as a character, mm-hmm. Which is that he does not believe that this man deserves forgiveness. He does not believe that this man actually believes these things. I think he believes that Ra has been using this as an opportunity to make himself feel better mm-hmm. and to allow himself basically to live, right? Mm-hmm. Because what he did is committed war crimes.
Right.
Yeah. And should be in prison, yeah, right? Yeah. And so the idea of the question that Mbenga asks is justice versus forgiveness. Mm-hmm. When is the consequence of your action to the point where one cannot be forgiven and just basically let off almost scot-free? Mm-hmm. And I think that I fall a little bit more on Mbenga's side mm-hmm. here than I do Christopher Pike, mm-hmm. because what we see here is that Ra was legitimately the one who gave the order, was the one who is having children killed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is right. Again, he is a straight up war criminal. Mm-hmm. And one can grant forgiveness personally to somebody if you're the victim of that, but that doesn't mean there shouldn't be, you know, legal repercussions, right? And the legal repercussions in the 23rd century, I think, since they don't have a death penalty, mm-hmm. I don't believe, except for maybe treason. I think treason might still be a death penalty, but the only one mm-hmm. For the Federation. So here, I think Ra, you know, absolutely should be in prison for the rest of his life, you know? So, but again, that's the greatness of this episode is that we can have this discussion. Mm-hmm. It's so awesome.
Yeah. So, no, I agree with you 100% on him specifically and the things that he did and the orders that he gave. And I think Mbenga is justified in his actions. And I think the difference between him and Pike, as you're mentioning, is that this goes back to the whole idea of what Chapel said. Why is it so hard to explain it to people who weren't there? And because Pike, he wasn't there. Not only was he not there on Jigal, he wasn't fighting in the war at all. He, in this story, is very much being that Federation captain who is sent on a mission to try to foster peace, and he's being very diplomatic, and he's doing the job that he's been given to do, which of course doesn't sit well at all with people who actually were there. So I do see the contrast there between the two of them. I'm curious about the idea that while Ra has told himself all these lies and he's come to believe them, and I do agree with you that he's doing what he's doing ultimately because it makes him feel better and it allows him to continue to live after everything he's done. If the things that he is doing lead to peace between the Federation and the Klingon Empire and thus save ultimately in the future millions or billions of lives, is there room for some sort of acceptance of his current actions because of the way it can benefit society in a second chance scenario?
Yeah. Well, I think the question that you're asking is, can work built on lies last? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it can. Because I think what ends up happening is once people find out something was built on a lie, mm-hmm. it ruins everything.
Well, I used to think that way, but when I watch the news these days, I'm not so sure.
Right. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I totally understand because I start to feel very similar to you in that sense. But I think ultimately, you know, that's the crux of the issue is mm-hmm. does the truth matter? Mm-hmm. And I think that it does in the end. In the long run, I think in the long run of history, the truth does actually matter to people.
Right.
And so here, I think it matters as well. And you know, the the biggest thing becomes, you know, Christopher Pike says, shouldn't people be given a second chance and a chance at redemption? Okay. Maybe personally, but legally, no. I mean, because the law and personal redemption are two totally different things, right? That's the difference between law and grace. And so legally, one should be held responsible for their actions. And, you know, personally, though, if the relationship between Mbenga and Ra, right, if Mbenga wants to grant forgiveness to Ra, that's a different thing, right? So I think the problem is that, to me, Pike is equating basically a spiritual answer, mm-hmm. which I think is legitimate, mm-hmm. with a legal answer, and mm-hmm. those two things are separate to mm-hmm. me, because in the larger sense of like government and everything, government is responsible for upholding the law, mm-hmm. and so now, you know, with the Federation penal colony system and everything, could Ra have gone to prison or whatever and then found a way to, you know, earn early parole or something and then have come out and become a champion for peace, mm-hmm. and people would have been able to, you know, like those are all questions that we could ask and everything about rehabilitation and all that. But I think what drives, especially, of course, Mbenga in this episode, is that this man has been profiting on lies, mm-hmm. and perpetuating peace based on lies, mm-hmm. and it really is more about him benefiting the personally there, and mm-hmm. there's, you know, and so that's what kind of I think drives him mm-hmm. to do what he does, which is basically bring justice to a character who has not been given justice, mm-hmm. Especially for all those that were victims, mm-hmm. you know. And so
so this sounds like another rip from the headlines episode, in a sense.
I mean, absolutely. But
but I hear what you're saying.
The joy of this episode, though, is that the depth of the questions that are being asked are some of the deepest that we have as human beings. And this is the kind of thing I think that Star Trek can be best at. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that is why I like this episode so much. We're having to wrestle with this ourselves.
Right.
And that's great.
Well, I just jokingly said ripped from the headlines episode because, of course, it does mirror some things in the real world today. But what it really does is what Star Trek does at its very best. And that is that it is timeless, because this situation has happened throughout history and it will continue to happen in the future. There are people like Ra throughout our history. And when you have a story like this, where you can have a discussion as we're having today about real issues and real questions that we always, you know, throughout time will have to grapple with, then you have great Star Trek and great science fiction.
Well, and I think, too, you know, this whole episode really deals with, you know, one of the greatest Star Trek questions posed by the Vulcan axiom, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And we absolutely see that on display in this episode about the needs of the many versus the needs of the one, specifically with the patient that Chapel was trying to save. It's in the pattern buffer, and they end up having to get rid of that pattern so that they can save more people. And it's a terrible choice that mm-hmm. they're faced with.
Yeah.
And yet I think we would all say that Mbenga does make the right decision, because we are saving more lives mm-hmm. and more likely to have these lives that will be able to be saved with this one that, you know, they don't even have the equipment really to save. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's phenomenal. But, you know, the other thing that we then ask here with those needs of the many is like, well, you know, war, what's it good for? Mm-hmm. What are we fighting for? Who are we fighting for? Mm-hmm. You know, can we stop war without all the dying? You know, it's like, these are really intense and incredibly detailed questions that I think are awesome, mm-hmm. right? To and again, some of the biggest questions that we ask. I mean, and Benga is actually trying to do that very thing, that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. So mm-hmm. him sacrificing himself, his own conscience, his mm-hmm. To go do this mission mm-hmm. will inevitably save more lives, right? So he's yeah. actually a living example of that.
Right.
So I just, oh my gosh, it just is, it's so deep in it, but it's also so impacting emotionally mm-hmm. to be with these characters as they struggle through these intense philosophical and moral questions that are having a legitimate impact on their life, but everybody else's in life in that here and now of mm-hmm. those moments during the war.
Yeah. Everything we learn about Mbenga in this episode, when I was watching it, it just really highlighted to me. I saw some viewers mentioning earlier in the season, after the Broken Circle and a few others, about they keep introducing these things about Mbenga. He was supposed to be in the war. This doesn't make any sense. Why don't they explain this? Patience. You know, it's only 8 episodes in the season at this point, and we got the explanations. So across the board, I think with things like this, don't go episode to episode. Remember that, you know, they're telling a story. They're not going to give you all of it at once.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a side note I felt like mentioning because it popped in my head as I was watching. Back to the war thing here, though, Mbenga has this line. He explains, we have to fight so the people we love can have a chance to live in peace. That's Starfleet. Now, from his perspective, he says that Starfleet at the end, and it implies one point of view of the Federation is right, Starfleet is right, we're fighting. But what I liked about the first part of the statement, if you take that Starfleet off, is that it takes us into that gray area where anyone who's fighting, I shouldn't say anyone, of course, there are people who are fighting just to take over the world or the quadrant or the universe or whatever. But for the most part, I think it's important to step back in a conflict, whether it's war or it's just an argument or anything, and just remember that from each person's point of view, they have something that's driving them. And I'm not trying to say one is right and one is, you know, I'm not saying that, for example, Klingons massacring people at Jagal is right. I'm not saying that. But if you step all the way back to the beginning of this conflict that we're seeing in this episode, which takes us back to the beginning of Star Trek Discovery, how that conflict started between the Federation and the Klingons, from the Klingon perspective, they were fighting so that no one would intrude on their way of life, and so that the people they love on their side could live their lives in peace. And then this whole conflict erupts. And if you take this statement as shades of gray and just remember that it ties into the other thing that Chapel says in here. And she says, I guess it just goes to show no one ever really knows what goes on in anyone's heart. And maybe combining that with what I'm talking about here is a little bit of a stretch. But I don't know, to me it was just stepping back is what I think the message of Star Trek is supposed to be, is to step back and try to look at things from different perspectives, different people's perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that you think about this, and, you know, when he says that Starfleet, you mm-hmm. know, he's thinking of, you know, one of the reasons that Starfleet exists is to explore strange new worlds, mm-hmm. but to create these alliances, which do help keep us safe, right? But the other side of that is that you do come up against people who want to destroy you as well. And so there's two sides of that coin. You can create peace through compromise. Mm-hmm. You also are sometimes forced to create peace through war.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think specifically of just having seen Oppenheimer and the argument of, you know, creating, like, say, an atomic weapon was maybe by creating this weapon, it's so terrible we can create peace because we don't want to ever have to use a weapon of this magnitude, right? And so there's just, again, it's these very deep questions about what it means to be human and how we interact with one another that come to light. And, but I, you know, I think that this episode is one of those as well that does show there are some people that need to be stopped through war, you know, those that are willing to kill children and whatnot. We can't just sit on the sidelines and do nothing, you know, so, and the difficulty in that. And so even those, especially, you know, we see that are involved in that and what it costs them to do that. Yeah. So,
well, imagine if the U.S. had sat on the sidelines in World War II.
Right, exactly.
Imagine the world we would be living in today.
Probably wouldn't be here.
Right, right.
So,
and if you look at today, I know there's disagreement about how to handle the conflict in Ukraine, Russia's war on Ukraine, but if you sit back and you do nothing, you're guaranteed Russia will push forward. They're not going to stop there. So sometimes you have to take a stand, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it does is it allows us to see the complexity of these type of questions and that none of them are easy. And I think that's the thing about this episode that's so wonderful, because it doesn't really give us any easy answers, especially since the episode ends with Chapel lying for Joseph and being willing to do so. And yet that lie leads to justice for a bunch of people who have never had it. And so, again, you are creating this like weird ball of morality questions that you're not really sure where it's going to land, you know, what court it's going to be in, of whether what happened was the right thing or the wrong thing. And it's just that it's a very difficult ending, because it's like you were saying, we're not just in shades of gray. This is gray, right? And I think that's something that is what makes this episode so good, because it doesn't tell you what the right thing to feel is. And that's where I think the episode is the best. You know, when episodes don't preach at you, they allow you to just sit and kind of wrestle with the quandaries of humanity. I think that's where Star Trek is at its best.
Well, one other thing that we wanted to touch on here as we start to wrap up the discussion, and this is not about the story so much, but about one of the actors, Clint Howard, returns. And it was such a delight to see him on the screen. And it was funny for me because I think 2 nights ago, I watched the Arrested Development episode where he appears up in the tree when Lindsay is up in the tree. And, you know, I love that Ron Howard pulled his brother into these things. But I don't think fans realize, perhaps, that Clint Howard has the longest span of appearances in Star Trek. It's been 56 years since they filmed the Corbomite maneuver on the original series, where he played Baylock. That was in June 1966. And then this episode that we just watched, Under the Cloak of War, was filmed in May of 2022. And so you've got 56 years there. And he also played Grady in Past Tense Part 2 on DS9, Muck in Acquisition on Enterprise. He was that Orion that gave drugs to in Will You Take My Hand at the end of Discovery Season 1. And then, of course, Martinez here.
Yeah, I mean, he's great in the episode, I think, you know, partially because I think he plays the character in kind of a, you know, just like this manic kind of way of somebody who, you know, has been dealing with being on the front lines too long and, you know, trying to bring a new person in, get them situated, and then immediately, of course, they're called to action. And so you get a sense of this person very quickly by casting Clint Howard. And I think he does a phenomenal job in the episode and, you know, really brings this character to life who doesn't have a ton of screen time. And yet I immediately know who this person is and the struggle that they're facing because of his performance. And so, I mean, perfect choice.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. It's great. And then we also have the boatswain whistle, which that was kind of interesting to me because the implication here is that it was just an Enterprise thing at first, because I've always felt like it was a Starfleet thing, but Pike says it's become kind of a thing on Enterprise.
See, what I like is this idea, and this is another place I will give super credit to the episode. This is where this, I think, really fits with the fact that, you know, ships in TOS had differences to them. They had different badges. They had different customs. And so for the flagship to kind of create its own traditions that would then possibly and do go on to become, I think, standard across the fleet is great. This episode completely adds something in that way, I think, that makes, you know, then watching further episodes of TOS and then the rest of canon awesome, right? Because this is a point in which, you know, all these types of traditions and standards in Starfleet weren't set in stone, right? You know, captains had a lot of leeway as to the things that they did on their ships, the things that kind of, like he said, kind of became traditions. And so I think that's phenomenal. And it's it adds this little nugget that just kind of like, that's so fun. Like, again, this is the perfect way to be adding to Star Trek when you're playing in these type of time periods. This episode, hands down, does all of that, I think, phenomenally.
And I also like the way that we get the boatswain whistle when Ra beams aboard the Enterprise, and we had the same in the Undiscovered Country when the Klingons beam aboard the Enterprise. So nice little 100%. Echo there. Well, what are your final thoughts on this one, and what's your rating for Under the Cloak of War?
I mean, this is the best episode of Strange New Worlds that they've ever produced. I don't even know if you can argue that it's not to me. This is, and for all the reasons we've talked about, but for all the reasons I was just mentioning of like, this is exemplar number one of exactly what they should be doing every single episode when it comes to finding ways to create a series that melds perfectly with canon and adds something wonderful all at the same time. I just hope that they will find ways to continue this trend on this show as we move forward, because it's great. You know, it's everything that Star Trek is supposed to be. And again, I'm not saying that every episode needs to be this serious.
Right. They don't have to be just this heavy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But the way in which this is written, I think even the beauty of the fact that the characters sound so much more like Star Trek that we're used to.
Yeah.
There's very few phrases in here that feel modern. There's a couple.
Just, we got this. We got this.
Yeah.
That's the modern one that I feel slips in so much, but it's fine because in the scenario here, it made sense.
But there's a couple little moments there every once in a while, but otherwise this just feels like it fits with every other series that we've done perfectly. Mm-hmm. And so this is a clear 5 out of 5 for me. And I would say, you know, it's, if you're talking like best episodes across series, this is one of the best episodes just because of everything that it does, not only for itself, but I think, you know, when you look at the grand span of Star Trek, it's a phenomenal episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I have a whole lot to add because you've summed it up pretty well. I'm not sure for me if it's the best episode of Strange New Worlds. I'd have to go back and rewatch them all. But in terms of really tackling a subject and tackling issues and doing it in a way that feels completely like the Star Trek that I've been watching for so many years, then I think this is probably the one that does that the best. I think it's, of course, subjective what you enjoy when you're watching, but it's a great episode. I found it interesting what they did with the Klingon makeup here, because it does feel like a rebuke of the Discovery Klingon designs, because this is, you know, the flashing back to the actual war that took place in season one of Discovery.
Right.
But that's fine, because it just kind of reinforced for me the way I look at these things, which is that regardless of how aliens are portrayed on screen in different series or by different creators, I think I mentioned on here, I think it was Saddle Up, I mentioned this a while back, that, you know, we're being told stories of something that happened, and maybe the storyteller's memory or the way they describe something is not exactly the same or consistent. And so this is a case where, for me, the Klingons are just the Klingons, and maybe sometimes the portrayal is slightly different. But I was happy that they went back to a look that we've been familiar with since TNG and, well, since the TOS films and onward, because it seats the relationship between the two sides more solidly for me as I'm watching it. So I like that. So that's just one thing to add.
But it's a new interpretation of that too.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's adding something, yeah, yet at the same time feels very familiar. So, again, right, 100%, it's where this entire episode, I think, lands, yeah, where it's doing all those things really well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a case of updating something in a way that remains very familiar. Like, we talked about that on The Artificial Tango with what they did with the Ferengi and Picard, for example, in season 3, where it,
yeah, exactly,
it feels modern, but it's still very, very familiar. So, no, I thought this was a fantastic episode. I'm going to give it 10 pinches of Dalton parsley.
Phenomenal. Be careful with that, Chris.
Well, 10's a lot. So, you know, I might not be able to record later this week. I might still be hallucinating or recovering in bed, but yeah, it's worth it. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Under the Cloak of War. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. If you're already a member, you know how it works. You'll see a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can leave your comments there for Matthew and me and fellow listeners. Get some more discussion going. If you're not a member already, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. It should come right up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. Please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It is a group there just for listeners, so we would like to get that information so I can let you in. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up, and that message will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not crafting new recipes that include Dalton parsley, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over the place under the name MattRushing02 on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, Vero. You can also find me in the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of those fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. You can also find me doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I talk about Deep Space Nine and the Orb. On Warp 5, we're talking about Star Trek Enterprise. On the Artificial Tango, we've got Star Trek Picard. Over on the Nerd Party, there's a couple of shows. One is Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, talking about all the chapters of the Harry Potter series, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars. But Chris, when you're not trying to sneak seconds of jambalaya, where can people find you?
That's why my bag is so messy. You know, it's really hard to slip jambalaya into your bag. But yes. Yeah. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, doing all those shows that you and I do together. There's also The Ready Room, which Larry Nemechek and I do from time to time. And you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog. And I'd love to chat with you in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can find me on all the new platforms as well. And I'd love to hear from you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us. We would not be here without you. So thank you so very, very much. Well, Matthew, I am looking forward to breaking out into song with you next week as we talk about Subspace Rhapsody.
Well, Chris, hit it!